This is the Sky is Blue podcast.
Well, I never felt more like singing the blues, cause I never thought that I'd ever lose your love, dear. Why'd you do me this way? Well, I never felt more like crying all night, cause everything's wrong and nothing ain't right without you.
Well, matches have been coming thick and fast, a lot thicker and faster than the Sky is Blue podcast, but we're back recording the night before the trip to Hartlepool on BT Sport for everybody to watch across the nation. So, as usual, it's me, Phil Tooley, Paul Fisher, Stuart Basson and Daryl Carpenter. We'll be looking back over the last six or seven matches or so. The last, well, if there's six or seven matches, you'd assume there'd be six or seven signings, wouldn't you, really? Mostly done on the day of a match. Injuries and forthcoming fixtures as we come towards the business end of the season. And see if James Rowe can add to the 50 points in his first 26 games that he's already accrued for Chesterfield to put the Sparrites right in the mix. But with a couple of tricky games coming up over the weekend, Hartlepool and Torquay, third and first, respectively. So, since we last spoke, Paul, you know, it's been a mixed time, but still in there. We can look at the great win away at Eastleigh and the great win away at Bromley, but a bit of mix in between. There was a win at Kings Lynn, draws against Wrexham and Boreham Wood, and defeats against Bromley at home, of course, and Halifax Town. Real mixed bag, but still in the mix.
Yeah, indeed, and it's important to be there. I think the last pod, we weren't actually quite in the playoffs before we did that, but I think a couple of away wins at Weymouth and at Eastleigh sort of made sure that we jumped in. It might have been the Kings Lynn result, I can't remember which one it was, that made us jump into the top seven as such, but it has been a bit of a mixed bag, hasn't it, at times. The home form seems to have slightly dropped off keel a little bit, while the away form has been fantastic. So far, so maybe it's something that James Rowe can look at a little bit. Two tough games coming up, of course, which I'm sure we'll talk about pretty soon. But yeah, the mixed bag results. Very impressive performance at Bromley the night, just to stop that poor run overall. But the home form, again, as I mentioned before, just been a bit sketchy, hasn't it? But the away form, as I say, been pretty decent, and that's what's kept us in there, really, I think.
And Daryl, you know, the next two games, Hartlepool and Torquay, followed by the rest of the seven fixtures that are due, I would say in seven out of seven, the opposition will be going all out for a win, not in the Boreham Wood avoiding defeat manner that we had a week or two ago. Obviously, Hartlepool and Torquay, along with Sutton, are gunning for that automatic promotion place. Those teams near the bottom, Woking, Kings Lynn, Wealdstone, have got nothing to play for. There's no relegation fear, so they can go out and enjoy themselves. Dagenham and Redbridge, who were near the bottom, have just come off the back of three wins. And then Halifax, well, there could be an awful lot riding on that last game at the Shay. But we've got seven games against teams who will be trying to win, and that must be an advantage for Chesterfield.
Oh, I think so. I mean, that Boreham Wood game, I think I still haven't woken up from it, really. they're an awful group to watch, aren't they? And we do have trouble when we come up against big, physical, well-organised teams who sit very, very deep. We never got round the back of them all night. We didn't create very much. I mean, the Asante injury was obviously crippling, both from that particular game's point of view, but for the rest of the season and beyond. But yeah, I tend to agree with you, Phil. The thing with these sides that have nothing to play for, and this is what worries me about the integrity of not having relegation, is that they will either go out and play with complete freedom, or like Wealdstone, who capitulated, was it 7-2 against Hartlepool? Mm-hmm.
Came back well. They scored. They were 7-0 down at one stage.
You know, human nature says, If you get a goal behind or too early on, your head's going to go down because, you know, does it really matter? So I do think that decision, I don't think we had any choice at the end of the day, has intrinsically affected the integrity of the thing. But I'm still pinning our hopes on staying in the top seven, and I reckon, off the top of my head, we need about 15 points to do it, and I think we can.
And the three teams that Chesterfield play immediately after Torquay, Woking away, they've got a record of 1-14. King's Lynn at home, 2-16. Wealdstone at home, 1-10. You know, you've got to assume that anything less than 9 points from those three games in that target of 15 is going to be a disappointing return, isn't it, Daz?
Oh, yeah, absolutely right, Phil. I mean, I will take two draws Saturday and Monday of the two coming up this weekend now, if you offered it to me. Because I do think when you're playing sides at the top, and that was the thing that was disappointing about the Bromley and Halifax games we should never have lost. You know, a point from either of those now would be looking really, really good. It would have improved our position enormously, not just because it gives us the extra point, but taking the two off the other two. So, draws against teams in and around you are never bad results, are they?
No, they don't. Stuart, looking at that Bromley victory on Tuesday night, that was almost a playoff preliminary, wasn't it? Because you're playing a team who's up there that you've got to go out and beat. And, you know, not only did Chesterfield win, they won in some sort of style. The Bromley goal, I think it would have been 1-0 had Grant Smith not made that error. That said, it was a great finish from young Josh Arthurs for the goal. But that was almost a practice for the playoffs, because they're one-off games that you've got to go out and win. And, we don't want to go into penalties. We're on a good run on penalties. We're not going to win another one, surely. No. And, that really will have been something that I'm sure, assuming Chesterfield do get to the playoffs, that James Rowe will constantly review and remind his troops about.
I'm sure he will, yes. As is my usual habit, I was a nervous watcher of it, but on reflection afterwards, you sort of think, why? You know, because we looked in good shape all the way through that, didn't we? You know, young Clark going forward like he was, much better, much further forward, I think, than deeper, as he has been played from time to time. Taylor looks an absolute revelation again, just as he did when he joined us, and we do look really well set now, and you know, with 2-1 winners, deservedly so, and in terms of what they created, I think there were a few after we went 2-1 up, weren't there, when we were sort of hanging on a bit at the end, and Smith pulled out one or two reasonably good saves, but I don't think they troubled us really, and there is much in the way that we played that James Rowe can bring back to the blackboard, you know, when he's setting us up for playoff matches, whoever they're against. I mean, we could be any one of the last, not Boreham Wood now, but Bromley all the way through to Torquay plus Halifax at the end, they could all be playoff opponents again, couldn't they, really?
And that you refer to, Stuart, that last under the cosh a bit after the second goal, again, that's good practice, because the playoffs, if you are in front, there will be a bit of gung-ho play from the opposition. So a bit of practice against gung-ho could only go well, assuming it goes well for the team.
Indeed. And it's, you know, It is good to get that sort of practice, because that will happen, and you know, we need to be practicing what we're going to do, setting up to face that. Are we going to leave people up to try and break and extend the lead, you know, or are we going to be confident in our ability to hold our shape at the back there and just keep people out, keep them to shots from outside the box and things like that? And as I say, I until we actually conceded, and it wasn't really a crafted chance that they conceded from, they scored from, rather, was it? Until we conceded, we didn't really look in any danger, you know. And just as like at King's Lynn, we went 1-0 down, but we never looked like losing it, even when we were 1-0 down. It was just a question of when, really, rather than if, you know. And to turn that game round, and just kept Bromley at bay, you know, one of the better sides in the league, make no doubt. They got some good young players, but we were able to keep them at arm's length reasonably comfortably, I thought, throughout the whole of the game.
And in the two games over Bromley. I think Michael Cheek probably only had one chance in the entire 180 minutes, and he scored from that. So it shows don't give him chances for sure.
No, I was just going to say it's a bit of a peculiar performance from Cheek, I thought, on Tuesday, because he was in trouble with the ref early for something. He had one or two or three challenges with Gunning, where Gunning went down rubbing his head, you know. And he just seemed to be a bit off it for me on Tuesday. He wasn't anything like the threat that I thought he would be, having seen the game up here.
Yeah, the booking in the 17th, 18th minute, something like that, I do think took the edge off him a bit, and Gunny's got the experience to know how to play that. That's absolutely for sure. I have to congratulate the people who edited the 6 minutes of highlights from the Bromley game. They're the sort of people who must make an absolutely lousy Hollywood film look quite good, because it made it look as though Bromley were in the game.
Well, yeah. I'd have to look closely at it and make sure that all those chances they showed were actually against us. You know, they might have slipped one or two others in against teams wearing the same kit.
I think they showed
every instance. A lot of tape.
Yes, I think they used every instance of Bromley getting in our final third, and a handful of the ones of Chesterfield in their final third. But there you go. I'm not sure who does all the editing these days, whether it's the home team or somebody at the National League or BT. I really, really don't know. I'm not going to lose sleep over it. And, of course, the week before, the match before, Wrexham set that up, because the two performances were very, very similar, with the exception of goals, Paul.
Yes, I mean, what a useful point that was then at Wrexham, you know. So, it's a useful point. Perhaps 3 points would have been deserved overall in the candidacy for that. So, you know, going there, I was a bit fearful, actually, of going there. You know, on the back of the home defeat and the game in hand, you know, against Halifax, I was a bit fearful going to Wrexham, thinking that, you know, they've made a load of new signings as well, the strikers and whatnot, thinking that we're... might get a little bit turned over here, but no, a staunch defensive performance, and then in the end could have won it as well. So marvellously set up, and to get 4 points from those two particular games, I think did us the world of good. And it's just the little bit of the icing. Could be happy if we get a point tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, obviously Wrexham following James Rowe leads, their two latest signings, both from Gloucester City. But Gloucester signed them after most of their team had disappeared somewhere else that I can't quite remember where they went to. And in those, you know, we've touched on those defeats, Daz. You know, neither Bromley nor Halifax should have ended in defeats. Whilst, you know, the Halifax was a little bit of defensive lapse more than anything. Bromley, when the equaliser came, it looked like there was only going to be one winner. Bromley had been just happy to soak everything up, and then they flicked a switch, didn't they, when we equalised and looked like the likely winners?
They did. It was a bit of a shock, because I think once we rightly got back on level terms from the unlikely source of Harry Maguire's brother's right foot, I did think we'd go on and get the 3 points, but it showed a little bit of frailty that I think we do have without Gunning and or Hollis. Mm. The first goal was really a nothing. We lost the ball in midfield, a simple knock over the top. I think Kerr, who's been used to playing right at three, suddenly finds himself the middleman and has lost Cheek. And he was never going to miss, was he? You know, he's earned his living on that kind, putting that kind of chance away for years at that level. And then we'd had a warning a couple of times. Is it the guy Kizzy at the right wing back sort of area? And he got round the back a couple of times round Lawrence, and he'd lost him first half from set pieces. And I know their manager made reference in after the game that it's something that they'd talked about before the game, that Maguire can go to sleep on that back stick, and he certainly did for the winner. And really, it was a travesty in terms of, if it had been a boxing match, you'd have called it off a long time earlier, wouldn't you? But they're just frailties that we had at the back when we had to make, you know, with Hollis out for a long time, obviously, and then Gunning being going off. We just looked a bit unbalanced, I thought, at the back for the first time in really since Rowe came.
Yeah, very very much so. And the Halifax defeat, the concessions there were both second phases in from set plays, a corner and a free kick, weren't they? That hasn't been a feature of Chesterfield's game at all in recent times.
No, we looked down, didn't we, as a side? I think we were still getting over the Asante blow. We then had the defeat on the Saturday at home against the run of play. We looked a bit sorry for ourselves, and I thought we were that first half against Halifax, we were 5 yards off the pace and certainly weren't, I think, as the manager intimated to you, Phil, getting to the second ball first, applying pressure all over the pitch like we have been doing. And the first goals are nothing shot really through a ruck of players. I mean, it must have gone through, I don't know, 8-10 pairs of legs and nestled, bobbled into the corner. The second goal is a great delivery, but and a fine header, but we should never let him deliver it in the first place, should we? So, yeah, I just thought we were off the pace. But again, Halifax were hanging on, weren't they? And was it that the keeper made a fantastic save late on down at his near post when Kerr got round the back? And when things like that, you just think, well, it's not our night. And I thought we grew into the game, but by then the damage had been done, hadn't it, really?
It had, and certainly I think most Halifax supporters felt that they got a great win there without a great performance. And I don't think too many people could disagree with that. Well, of course, earlier on in that run, Stuart, the win at King's Lynn, having come from behind to win, which isn't something that happens too often, or hasn't happened too often in the last year or two. And one of my favourite tweets of the time, you know, Gaffer, how do we cope with their leading scorer? And he sort of said, well, we'll sign him then. And so Cairo Mitchell coming in, not eligible to, well, he was technically eligible to play for that game, but James Rowe said he wouldn't have played him anyway because he didn't feel it was right. And by the way, while we're thinking about that sort of thing, Scott Bowden isn't eligible to play for Torquay on Monday either. Okay. So his habit of scoring against former clubs, technically it's still his current club, isn't it? Won't be able to continue. But Cairo Mitchell, your thoughts, Stuart, on his progress since signing, obviously made his debut in that Boreham Wood game?
Yeah, and with the injury to Asante, I think for the first couple of games we didn't see him quite in the role that James Rowe might have signed him for, you know, because he suddenly was the one up front, as we had been playing with Asante. I would think that he'd been signed to play alongside another forward like Asante, but with more help, you know, he looks a better player. I quite like what I've seen so far. Got that nice goal against Halifax, didn't he? That you know, where he just sort of worried the player in possession a little bit and caused an error and fed on the scraps. You know, that's what you want to see players doing. Just need, you know, once he settles in, I think he'll be fine. But it's a big ask, I think, even, you know, because he scored a few goals for King's Lynn, didn't he? But that was in quite a short spell, and before that, you know, not a great deal of experience of football, even at this level. But I think, you know, as he grows more confident, and, you know, becomes more established, I think we'll see a lot more from him.
And we've seen more from him since a certain Danny Rowe has come into the side. The attacking version of Jan Molby. His technical ability, Stuart, is without question. He's only found himself in one shooting position from his favoured sort of 18 to 25 yard range in the games that he's played so far. But it seems to have given Mitchell a lot more freedom to go around. And whilst Mitchell might not have been playing absolutely at the top of his game, he's starting to take up the right sort of positions more often and play out of possession better and make himself available more. And Rowe's got that ability to be able to find him, hasn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's almost just as though having Rowe in the side draws people to him. And so they're paying less attention to Mitchell, you know? When Asante was playing on his own up front, they were able to crowd him out reasonably effectively. And I don't know, if you have two up front or one up front and one sort of ish, like Rowe has been playing, then I think it just stretches the defenders a bit more, you know, and especially with Rowe setting up not to play in exactly the sort of position that, well, we all hoped he might, I suppose, and expected that he might, and certainly the opposition would expect him to be a bit more, you know, of an attacking sort of forward. With him not doing that, I think it sows confusion, and that, you know, disorganises defences and opens it up for the rest of them, people like Mitchell especially.
Yeah, playing in that slightly withdrawn role, Paul, really does confuse the defence, and it allows a technical player like Danny Rowe to get on the ball and play switch passes. He's done short passes, long passes, and he's good at holding the ball as well, waiting for the midfield to come through. And it's funny, isn't it? He signed as a striker. He signed as one of the most prolific strikers at National League level he's ever been. But his presence so far has improved the team without him ever really looking like scoring.
Yeah, I get that. It's a lot of fans are saying, well, why is he playing so deep, everything? But you've watched Danny Rowe over the last sort of 4 or 5 years. If you take more interest in non-league football, you'll see that he plays a withdrawn role. It's almost Jack Lester-esque, you know, obviously without the sort of close ball skills that they'll have. I hesitate that Danny Rowe probably scored more goals than Jack Lester over the course of the time. But he does play that withdrawn role. That people seem to forget there's another striker with him this time. You know, so if people can concentrate on Rowe, Mitchell's there to try and pick up the slack. It's just a shame that Asante's not available, isn't it, to be alongside Rowe. They would work together. Asante comes deep at the same time as well. They could interplay. Would that bring Tom Whelan back into the starting 11 a little bit more to the expense of Jack Clarke? And I'll just play the caveat for the last podcast. I said that Jack Clarke would be much better as a defensive midfielder. I lie. He's a much better as an attacking midfielder. He's much better when he gets his head down and starts running at the defences. I know he's only young, but yeah, from what I saw the last couple of games, he's very, very impressive when he gets his head down and runs at the defence. But Danny Rowe, I think we can look forward to seeing him score. He just needs that first goal.
And of course, Daz was teasing us. He knew that somebody was signing. I think he secretly knew who it was, but God, all you at Chesterfield FC, he would not open his lips. We were guessing everybody that's walked the planet, and
except Rowe, yeah.
And you know, talking about Jack Clarke, Daz, that goal that he scored is going to give him an awful lot of confidence, because Chris Bush is one of those players that we've talked about at National League level so often that just bosses it physically, doesn't he? And very, very reliable. And Clarke, who's about half his size and half his weight, just hustled him into a mistake. But he'd still got some work to do, hadn't he, Daz?
Oh, not half. I mean, I think Clarke's been getting better and better with every game. And he buzzes around people. He's a constant nuisance. And I think he eventually sort of bought that error out of Bush by being around him where he wanted time on the ball. And when he picked it up, you know, all credit to him. Two touches, head up, and it was a great finish, because he's coming in for a left footer from the wrong side, really, to hit the corner. And it was just a peach of a finish, wasn't it? And it will have given him a tremendous boost of confidence. And that's what the youngsters need, isn't it? You know, I think Rowe said he needed to put an arm around his shoulder. He's that kind of lad. And that will have done him the world of good. He could be a big influence over the next few weeks, you know, going into the back end of the season, because he's something different as well. Anyone that can carry the ball at that level and go past people as he can, and now he knows he's got to finish on him as well, that'll do him the world of good.
Is there an inkling that he may be here next year, because his loan is finishing at the end of the season and he won't get a new contract with Aston Villa. Right. So is there an inkling that he could be possibly with us next season?
I couldn't possibly comment, Paul.
Yes. Nice, we'll leave it at that. Nice smile. Yeah, if you're listening on the podcast and can't see Daz's face, nice smile on there, a bit wry. And talking, Daz, about players improving with every game, substitute the name Manny Oyeleka, because you know, we wondered what all the fuss was about on game number one. By the time he played away at Bromley, he saw what all the fuss was about, because he ran that middle of the park, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd got some awareness of him, actually, the sad soul I am. The year we were going down, I was watching quite a bit of National League football. And I remember him playing for Aldershot at that time, presumably when James Rowe was number two down there. And every game you saw him, he was a beast. I mean, he was winning the ball off people and travelling with it. And he had a goal threat in him. And the sort of player who stands out to you, you know, when you really don't know who's playing. And he certainly, in the last two games, I thought he was terrific at Wrexham. But Tuesday night, in the absence of Weston, who's been terrific as well, just said, right, I'll take that responsibility. Don't worry about it, Gaffer. You know, they're not getting past me tonight, and I'm going to run the tempo of the game. That was the other thing for me, along with Smith, who I also thought, again, was very handy.
Very good. Yeah.
They just ran the tempo of the game, but broke everything up. He was awesome Tuesday. He really was.
And as you've alluded to, took Martin Smith with him as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think he's quite a handy footballer, I have to say. The more I see of him, the more I like him. Yeah.
And talking of handy footballers, Stuart, you mentioned him earlier on. Joel Taylor, he's had a couple of extra bouts out with COVID isolation and everything along those lines. But the last couple of games, you know, he's just absolutely been top dog, Wrexham and Bromley away, hasn't he? And been responsible for as much as anybody on the park for getting those 4 points in the two games. And what a cross for Carlisle's goal.
Yeah, it's sensational, isn't he, to watch? Taylor or Whittle, for most of the games, I would have said Whittle, simply because he has the appearance of being a better defender, you know, but Taylor gives us so much more going forwards than Alex Whittle has been able to so far. And as you know, his crossing ability, as you say, is just a joy to watch, you know, and he doesn't seem to have to spend ages controlling the ball and getting it on his right foot and getting it just in the correct place that he wants it. If it comes to him, he'll just ping it over and it'll be so effective. And yeah, I mean, that cross placed where it was, I think there was one or two Chesterfield players could have gone after it and bundled it in, and it just, you know, fell right at the feet of Carline, as we saw, to give, that was his first goal for us as well, wasn't it? So there were
it didn't
two.
Seem like it, because my initial reaction wasn't that, oh, that's his first goal, as it was with Jack Clark. Yeah, that was my first reaction with Jack Clark.
Yeah.
Of course, he scored at, was it Dagenham and Redbridge, and it was disallowed, and it's been that close so many times, hasn't it, that it doesn't feel like his first goal to me. And the quality of the cross was that good that Carline, who's been in that position 847 times during his Chesterfield career, even if he'd have completely mishit it, he'd have still got it.
He had the appearance, just in that crowd of players we were watching it through, of it sort of bouncing off a knee or something like that, but great cross, and he does that all the time. You know, he doesn't necessarily seem to stop to look up and look for someone and measure it, or just whack it in there, and it's an awfully difficult thing for defenders to deal with. It is so good to watch.
Well, I took the pleasure of correcting manager James Rowe off air on Tuesday night, when in the initial interview for the club and the Derbyshire Times, he sort of said about Carline, he says, yeah, he's played every minute of my stewardship, and I did ask him what position he played at Solihull away, and he couldn't think what position he played. That's because, of course, he was suspended, having been sent off against Solihull home. So I did take great pleasure in that, to be fair. But the one new signing we've not talked about before we move on is James Montgomery. We saw briefly, and yes. Views difficult to tell, impossible to tell. Certainly, the first goal that went through the legs, and the crowd live from the position I was sitting at, I felt that there was nothing he could have done about it. I've seen the replay and I feel that, yes, he was a little bit slow moving, even if he was unsighted. And, you know, there were questions on the other goal as well about the movement. So your view, Paul, on Mr. Montgomery's one and only so far?
Well, I mean, he's experienced enough, isn't he? Yeah, I think he perhaps would think that he could have done better, I think, with the goals. It was certainly a bit of a surprise, I suppose, he was going to go down the road. I didn't expect somebody of experience of him to come into the squad. But, of course, Gateshead aren't playing, are they? So, and he's coming in on a contract as well. It's not a loan. He's had a brief loan spell with Southend before then, didn't he? He played a couple of games for them.
A couple of an awful side as well. So that's,
well, exactly, yeah. But, you know, maybe one of the goals perhaps he could have done better with, but he looks a steady Eddie, doesn't he, really? I think, you know, whether he's done or not, it was a surprise. First and foremost, it was a surprise him coming in, but James Rowe indicated that he wanted to take a look at him, which was a bit of a strange one in a season when you're looking to grab as many points as you can looking for promotion. And you just bring a goalkeeper in and you think, well, I'll throw him in at the deep end. But, you know, maybe it was a question between Smith and his agent at that particular point that James Rowe just thought, well, I'll negotiate myself by dropping you and putting James Montgomery in. So a bit like what Cookie did with Brindley and Nandule that time away at Barnet when he refused to play ball, let's say, didn't he, at that point? But anyway, Montgomery, I think it's a useful signing towards the end, because otherwise we've seen Dylan Wharton. He was the only other one really who was going to be the sub goalkeeper, wasn't he? So you need some experience, and Montgomery certainly fits the bill.
And really feel sorry for Cam Mason, who the plug was pulled by his club apparently, and then a couple of days later he was released by them after the deadline had gone. So, you know, he's lost the opportunity of coming back to a club like Chesterfield, and he's clubless now as a result. So that was a real shame. Just to finish that Montgomery thing off, did the manager make an error with the selection on that one, do you think?
Yeah, possibly, given the opponents and the importance of the game, yeah. I mean, you could have picked one of the three less difficult on paper looking games that we've coming up after Torquay, couldn't you? Perhaps to do that. Had you chosen him to play against Wealdstone, unless you put him centre forward, you wouldn't have seen him, would you? The way they've been playing.
I do think it was a bit of a mistake. It was a game in hand that we had, you know, on the other side. It was a rearranged game that we had. But you don't know what went off behind the scenes with Smith. It's a real, you know, unless his hand was forced, so we had to play Montgomery. Yeah. I don't know.
No, I don't think there's any of that. But at the end of the day, I think Smith had kept something like 10 clean sheets in 15 games or something. It did seem a strange decision to me at the time. But of course, if Chesterfield had not made those two mistakes and won 1-0, nobody would have even questioned it. So
exactly.
I'm a bit like you on this one, Paul. I think there's more to this than meets the eye, and I don't know. I am purely speculating, but it struck me as a we've given a contract offer to Grant Smith. He hasn't yet signed, and I'm going to show him I've got somebody else in case he decides
start
dithering about. Because it was amazing how he signed immediately afterwards, wasn't it?
But I mean, it also could be from from Grant Smith's point of view, is that he's angling for a Football League deal.
Yeah.
You know, so he got a short-term contract with us.
Yeah.
To say, well, look, I'll sign with you, but I really want a Football League club to come in for me. Maybe he was still angling for that at this stage in his tenure with us.
Yeah.
So, but the security option is that he's got a year with us, isn't it, for the next year? Yeah. So maybe he was still hanging out for that. I don't know, but that's the only thing I can think of, is that Grant Smith was thinking, I want a Football League club.
But as Stu will confirm, for players, goalkeepers who played more than 10 games for Chesterfield, he stands at the top of the pile ahead of the likes of Alan Stevenson and Chris Marples on goals per match conceded. He's easily number one by a mile, isn't he, Stu?
Oh, yeah. You know, he's got that big old run of clean sheets that we had when we had our consecutive wins, you know. It's the best clean sheet record since Joe Mitchell at the end of 1920-21 in the Midland League, you know. So you've got to go back a long way, 100 years, wow. Actually, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I clean sheets against games played, obviously, not in sure. Total.
He's just
come in and he's just looked like a goalkeeper, hasn't he? Which has not always been the case with the people that we've employed as goalkeeper over the last 4 or 5 years.
And is he the first goalkeeper since Tommy Lee retired that looked like a goalkeeper that you want to
keep? Yeah, he does to me, you know. Yeah, absolutely.
Is this the record amount of goalkeepers this season?
Yes.
Is it a record amount of goalkeepers?
Yeah. Yeah. Six, including
Dylan. Six, including Dylan at the trophy at Boston. Yeah. I think we're done. I don't think we can get any more now. I think we're going to make do with what we got. Will Evans might yet make a return.
Well, yeah, we might still get somebody injured, mightn't we? Have used all the subs and all of that. Yeah.
And talking of injuries, we've mentioned Asante and how dreadful that is, but Hollis as well with that Achilles problem. They're both sort of, well, 9-month-ish type of injuries. And, you know, Hollis had just transformed himself and his performance, Daz, hadn't he, into if not the first name on the team sheet, certainly in the top two.
Well, the tragedy on both of them is, let's be optimistic and say we go up gloriously through the playoffs. What is it, 19th of June is the final? So you've got a fortnight's holiday, then you're back for pre-season training to kick off again first week in August. So you're a month behind every other club in availability of players. And you've got two of your very best right down the spine of the team who would probably be regulars in which either division were in, to be honest, not going to be available till the new year. I mean, they're awful, awful injuries when they're that kind of length. And, you know, they're serious enough to... Well, it always leaves a doubt in your mind, will they come back the same player? Be my worry.
Well, that's always the case, isn't it? And you know, will it happen again? We had the Aaron Downs. He did his ACL 3 times, I think, didn't he? For those, and once when he moved on to Cheltenham, I think it was, wasn't it? And, you know, it is difficult to do that. You know, Asante's not so much about sprinting. He could move a fair bit, but his is about strength. So, you know, your Achilles, where when you're a defender and you've got to jump and bounce and win headers, I think it'll be tougher for Hollis to get back to his level than it will be for Asante.
With his frame as well, I think, you know, he's not that... He's tall, isn't he, and gangly, but you wouldn't have thought he'd have got the same kind of resilience in his frame that Asante's clearly got.
But at the end of the day, you know, people have changed their style of play on the back of major injuries like that. And, you know, there's nothing stopping Hollis becoming your Chris Bush type of building up a little bit more solidity and playing as a strong, hard man at the back. You know, he's got he's still only 26, 27, isn't he? Something like that. He's got plenty of years ahead of him. Yeah. But no question about that. And of course, there's been other little niggly injuries to the likes of Jack McCourt, Joe Rowley, Gunning and Weston, who have been in and out. Or Weston's was out because of the plastic pitch, and that was the first time in 14 games without him starting that Chesterfield have won. You have to go back right to the early days of the National League for the last time a Chesterfield side without Curtis Weston starting won a game. So that just shows how well Smith and Ayoleka did do. I saw Joe Rowley at the under-19s match the other day, and he's just about back in full training. McCourt has returned to full training. So that central midfield trio, Paul, we've got an embarrassment of riches. We could almost have a Saturday team and a Tuesday team, couldn't we, in central midfield?
Yeah, indeed. I think it is, and it's useful as well, isn't it? You know, to have these players, and they've been required. Mm. So you know, the two centre midfielders that we've had that you can throw in, as Dad said about Tuesday night, I thought Oyelake and Smith were sensational. I thought they were really grew into the game. They stopped anything that was coming through from Bromley. McCourt's been missing for a while, but he was with the squad, wasn't he? I saw him on a camera that somebody else appeared in, by the way, on a camera screen on the video, I think. Somebody
made a surprise
appearance. I don't know. Some raving lunatic in the background came on and...
Must have been a monster raving loony party for the local election campaigning. That's all I can say. But that trio on Saturday, on Tuesday, was sensational in Marty Smith, Manny Oyeleka and Jack Clark. Rewind a few weeks and Weston, McCourt and Whelan were sensational.
Yeah.
So, you know, there won't be any of the team in the top 10 have got two solid trios like that have had sensational runs in the team. You know, there won't be anybody in that engine room that's got that. And, that's great to have. The weaknesses that we've got are your tough, uncomprised centre-half, because you've only got Gunning at the moment, because Kerr clearly is stronger at the right-hand side, as Evans was when he was in there. And George Carline on the right wing-back role. But, you know, maybe we've seen briefly Whittle playing down the right-hand side. He's probably the natural player to come in and do that. And I worked for Joseph Yarni, who, you know, the hardest thing to do for any player as a substitute is come on when you're up against it in the last 10 minutes as a central defender. And he didn't put a foot wrong, did he?
No. I thought he performed performed really well. Obviously started a couple of games in recent times. He is the natural backup there. Of course, if Gunning is a doubt for tomorrow, who would be on the bench? It looks unlikely to be Evans to be there, wouldn't it? So so maybe there's a case for Sharman to go up with the squad. I'm not too sure, but yeah, we can confirm that Fraser Kerr can play on Monday though, can't he? Because he's Chesterfield's player.
Yeah, that was a signing, not a loan. Whereas Bowden is a loan for Torquay. Yeah.
Going on to Yarni, he's doing the best he can to try and earn himself a contract at Chesterfield, isn't he? By keeping himself in the manager's thoughts.
It was interesting that James Rowe did say after the Bromley game in the week that he's seen a marked improvement in Yarni's training.
Yeah.
You know, whether he has at last bought in or if that last gasp, my word, I only got 7 or 8 games left to win a new contract here, comes in. You don't want it to be the latter. You want it to all of a sudden him wake up one morning and he's got it.
Yeah.
That's where you want it to be at, really, isn't it?
Indeed. You want to be sort of buy into this situation, you know, because you can quite easily find yourself on the scrappy. They're precious jobs, aren't they, at this level? So, Joseph Yarni can quite find himself out of contract and trying to earn something somewhere else, you know, perhaps even lower down. So he's got to get his head screwed on. And I think, obviously, as I've just mentioned, James Rowe's mentioning him in interviews, you know, in a positive light. Mm. So that can only bode well for him.
Yes, yeah, and he seems a real nice lad as well. And I think he's joining the dressing room was another thing, a lot more, which is another thing that the manager alluded to
Tom
as well.
Tom Whelan's friend as well, isn't he? So he knows him from.
We've got that Northwest gang, haven't we? At the moment, there's quite a few of them from the Northwest, and McCourt's in that little gang as well, coming in from that area. But Stuart, on to the next few days, Hartlepool away. They've had a fantastic run, 15 unbeaten, 8 wins, 7 draws. And I think we all thought on the first game of our season, because the Wealdstone game was off, of course, that Tuesday night at the Technique Stadium, that Hartlepool had set the standards. And I think they're still the best side that we've played on that performance. But they drifted away a bit. But all of a sudden, Dave Challen has really, really got them purring, hasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting when you said there that the unbeaten run of, 15 games seems almost to be made up half and half of wins and draws.
Yes.
So we shouldn't necessarily go up there expecting that we're going to come back with nothing. You know, they won a lot of games, but they've drawn a lot as well.
Yeah, they tend to draw on the travels. They've won 11 out of the last 12 home games, which is no mean feat.
Well, yeah. Now, people will say, obviously, that records like that end, you know, and the longer it goes on, the more likely it is to end. That's good for us going to Hartlepool to say that, but it's less good when we're playing teams like Woking, King's Lynn and Wealdstone, who are on rubbish runs at the moment, because those end as well, of course, eventually.
Yeah. Very up against us over the years.
Yeah, we've normally been the go-to team to ring up and call out whenever anybody needed 3 points. In a hurry, you know, you'd normally been quite obliging like that, but this is a different team, isn't it? I sort of fancy us to get something back from Hartlepool.
Well, of course, Ricky Bennett's gone back to Stockport. He was called back. Well, he wasn't called back. His loan came to an end. He scored a hat trick in their last match, 7-2. Yeah. And it'll be 2 weeks since they played. That can be a disadvantage as well as an advantage, can't it?
Yeah, I'd say so. Getting yourself back into a rhythm. And Chesterfield have had plenty of practice, haven't they, this season, of having a couple of weeks off due to unfortunate circumstances, haven't they? So, and not always gone to the right result, if I vaguely remember. But I think that, you know, it'll be difficult. They've been in a bit of a rhythm. All of a sudden, that comes to a stop. You know, and that player going back as well, who was a voice in the dressing room, perhaps scoring some goals. Yeah, it could upset their rhythm, couldn't it? So there's no reason to be afraid of going up to Hartlepool and getting the win, you know. And you'd all take a point, wouldn't you? Straight away, you shake hands right now on that, wouldn't you? So if it was a win guaranteed on Monday, of course.
Mm. And we were having a conversation a week or two ago, Daz, weren't we, about you'd watched them on television recently? We're very impressed, particularly with the right wing back, I think, And when I talk to people who watch Hartlepool, Gary Liddell's had an absolutely storming season at the back, the former Spirite, of course. And then another former Spirite, albeit a trialist, Nicky Featherstone, has been their heartbeat in midfield, hasn't he?
He has. Yeah, the two wide men, Armstrong and Cass, are very, very good. Armstrong on the left, Cass on the right. I think Cass was on loan from Newcastle, from memory.
Is it Elliot Cass, is it? Something like that.
He's got quite long hair and he's very good, that's all I can tell you. You're right with Featherstone. I mean, when I watched the Notts County game recently, he really makes them tick. And I think the battle tomorrow in central midfield, if I presume he'll play Olieki and Weston if fit, could determine the game. Because if you can stop Featherstone playing, you stop them playing. Liddell, to me, still looks like Liddell. And I think if we get at him, he hasn't got any quicker, that is for sure. He always had a rick in him when he was with us. He got sent off a few times, didn't he? And he wouldn't worry me particularly. But the other one I'm a bit worried about is, have they not signed the same kid who had the blinder for Aldershot in goal on loan from Middlesbrough? In the last day or two,
if they have, I've missed that because
I believe they have because their keeper's out for the season.
Yeah, Killian, he's got an elbow injury or something like that, and he's got a rick in him, Killian. Yeah. So I'm never disappointed when he is on the opposition starting line. Yeah, they had a guy playing the last few matches called Heinrich Ravas on loan from Derby County.
That's so, right. I'm sure, Phil, if you look it up, they've signed this. The guy who was on loan from Middlesbrough to Aldershot,
Brad James.
In the 0-0.
15-0, and it was 0-0. Yeah, that was the one.
Brad James.
That's the goalkeeper. Yeah. So, he's obviously a very handy replacement if he has that kind of night again.
Yes.
But for the rest of the team, stop Featherstone, no Richie Bennett. I think they've brought in a couple of strikers, but it's guesswork as to whether they'll do what they want them to, because they brought Bennett in because they had struggled to score goals. I think one of the front men got injured, didn't he? So, you know, it's... And the gap, we're all thinking Town are going to be tired. How many times have we seen us, you know, have a week off, usually when we knocked out of the FA Cup, for instance, and come back and you're rusty. And particularly when you've been playing Saturday, Tuesday, we're in a rhythm.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's, you know, a good point to make, for sure, Daz. In terms of Torquay, then, Stuart, you know, they've bounced back after a bit of a lull, haven't they? And on a real good run, 6 wins and a draw in 7.
Yeah, they've done well to get back on the bike, haven't they, really, from that point of view, because they did fall off it fine style a few months ago. And I, you know, you look for sides in any bunch, whether it's at the top or at the bottom, that are going to suffer or turn their form around 180 degrees, and it looked to me like Torquay would be the ones who sort of just slipped a place every week until they finished up about 12th or something. But as you say, they've done really well to get back on top of their game and start winning again.
And a little bit like Chesterfield a few weeks ago, if you look at those score lines in that run, 1-0, 1-0, 2-1, 1-0. They won 2-0 away at Woking, 2-2 against Notts County, having to be 2-0 down, and 2-1 home against Aldershot. You know, both teams have been in the games all the time, in essence, barring that Woking match when Torquay were 2-0 up after 15 minutes but didn't get any more.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've just been battles, haven't they? And it is all those 1-0s and things for us. Sort of have the look of having been battles as well, and I just think they all are at this point in the season. It is just turn up and get through it and come away with a win or a point or something, and then turn your attention to the next one. You know, it is just relentless. But as Daryl said, that gets you into a rhythm, you know, and the idea that Hartlepool haven't played for 2 weeks is interesting, you know, because they will not have had that rhythm sustained.
No, I personally am delighted that they've not played a fortnight, whereas James Rowe was moaning that they managed to postpone a Saturday game, which nobody ever does that, do they? Postpone a Saturday game against Weymouth to make it on the last day of the season. I understand the league wanting that to happen, but, you know, normally Saturday games are... You can't do anything like that, for sure. And you know, I like the fact that they're not played. I think there'll be that bit of rustiness, especially with Bennett being out. But for Torquay, you know, they've had those close games, so it means that you've got to concentrate every minute of every game as well, and it takes it out mentally. And Torquay, you know, I noticed that their big, strong striker Wright wasn't involved at all last weekend, and you know, that might be the time for, if Gunning's fit for Hartlepool, it might be a better game for him to miss if he can't make them both against Torquay, especially if Wright's not involved so much. So yeah, we'll see. But Torquay are on a real run, and in Lemina Hay Evans, I think they've got one of my favourite players in the division at the moment. I think Connor Lemina Hay Evans has been absolutely fantastic when I've seen him. And really grown into, still only young in his 20s, was a youngster at Bristol City, and you know, really grown into his position running the midfield for Torquay. But Torquay are beatable. There's no question about that.
Well, Danny Wright is undoubtedly their key man, because when he went down in January with a hamstring injury which needed surgery, that's when they dropped like a stone. Mm. He came back for 5 games and they won them all. On Tuesday, he didn't play. As you say, Phil, he wasn't anywhere near the... And I read in their local press this morning that he's got another hamstring injury. So,
right.
You know, I think he's absolutely crucial to the way they play. The other thing you need to do against him, of course, is stop the referee adding on 10 minutes at the end of the bloody game.
Yeah. I mean, their first 3 wins are all...
They beat us in about the 97th or 8th minute, didn't they, down there?
Yeah, did the same to County the other week, didn't they?
Yeah, they did somebody else a few weeks ago as well.
Well, I think I have a feeling their first 3 wins might have all been that. It was 90 minutes against Stockport on the opening day, yeah. 82 minutes against... it was a defeat. They beat Bromley, that was it. 90th minute penalty from Wright, and then they beat us 90th minute Acer Hall. So, yeah, they do like a late goal.
So if we can get the ref to blow the whistle on time, we're probably okay. And as I say, if Wright is missing, I think their whole team ticks off him. because whilst they've got some decent footballers, as you say, Phil, particularly that the guy in midfield, I think the whole team rotates around Danny Wright. I mean, he must be in his mid-30s now, but he's been around a long time. And he leads the line. He's a proper old-fashioned target man.
Yeah, well, he scored one hat-trick this season. It was in a 5-0 away win at Hartlepool. So he's 36 now. Danny Wright, you know, played quite a few games for likes of Wrexham and Cambridge and Cheltenham. And of course, he learned his National League craft at Solihull Moors. So he'll be known to a number of our players who'll know how to handle him if he does indeed play. So we've talked about most of the players. We've not really said much about James Rowe today, or of course Danny Webb, who's joined him as first team coach. Similar sort of age to Rowe is Danny Webb, and was assistant manager to Justin Edinburgh when Orient went up from this division. So he knows what success looks like. And I think he had a spell before Justin Edinburgh's time as caretaker manager when he was early 30s, I think, at Orient. He was really quite young and probably not ready for it. But comes from a football heritage, of course. His dad, Dave Webb, and we're all old enough to remember him. So, you know, it's another pair of eyes on the training pitch and on the technical area, Paul, isn't it? And, most teams will normally have a manager, an assistant manager and a coach. And I think James Rowe realised that it's too much for him to take on the coaching role and management role all of the time.
Yeah, I think a bit of a delegation there. I think you're absolutely right. And somebody can also lean upon as well the experienced George Foster as well. I didn't see too much hullabaloo on social media when this signing was made in the first coach. Usually it's whenever Chesterfield do make one, there's people saying, well, you're furloughing players this way, then why are you bringing this one in? This one was a little bit more low key, but it could be a key signing towards the back end of the season, couldn't it? So again, it's a little bit of impetus in the coaching standards and see if the players can receive some fresh ideas going into the back end of the season. So it could be a useful signing. Could be the best signing. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I asked him before the match at Wrexham if he could remember who he made his Football League debut against, and he wasn't so sure. And I did remind him it was against Chesterfield. So funny enough, I remember it because I used to love David Webb as a player. So he was manager at Southend at the time, and I remember his lad playing, and he played a couple of cup games before that, but that was his first Football League game as an 89th minute sub for Southend in a rare defeat for us in 10-11, the 3-2 defeat in 10-11. And the only other time he's played against Chesterfield was when that very nice, popular Bobby Zamora waited until none of the officials were looking to kick the ball out of Nathan Abbey's hands.
And singular.
Yes.
Mr. Abbey was by no means innocent of a lack of attention, if you like, over that.
But he remembered that. He said, "Oh yes, I remember that." Because he came on a sub just after Zamora set a goal in that that game. So and I had a very 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 brief chat with him at Wrexham, and he seems a decent lad. He was certainly not shy to give his views to players before the match and during the match. But James Rowe, you know, his star, Daz, keeps on rising. You'll have chatted to him, I'm sure, a few times as I have. And he's just so good. He's a nice enough bloke, but he's got that bit of steel in him as well, hasn't he?
Oh, I don't think he'll suffer fools gladly. And I think you only have to look at the way he's reshaped the squad and the way he's done it ruthlessly, really, in many ways. You get the impression one or two people crossed him maybe or didn't do what he expected them to do, and they quickly left the building or were, as it turned out, to be furloughed and so forth. I did think the furlough thing that came up again, I mean, the amount of chatter on various non-league sites about us and furloughing when every other team at this level and below and even above have done it. And there was one from one team that had just signed three strikers the same day and they were still having a go at us for signing somebody 2 weeks ago. But anyway, he's every time I listen to him, I'm just more and more encouraged for the future, even if we don't do it this season. And I think sometimes at the minute we do have to pinch ourselves and just think, hang on a minute, when he came in, we were in deep, deep trouble. A squad that had been cobbled together, no direction, you know, the trust having just taken over and all the financial constraints of COVID and everything else. And bear in mind, we've had the three COVID shutdowns as well for him to have produced. What did you say it was earlier, Phil? How many points?
He reached 50 points on Tuesday in 26 games, so nearly two a game.
Absolutely remarkable, you know, absolutely remarkable. And, you know, I can sit and listen to him. There's lots of managers you think, well, you know, you're just talking hot air. But I could sit and listen to him all night when he's talking about the ins and outs of the game and this and that and the other. He's such a breath of fresh air. I think we're very, very lucky to have him. How long we'll keep him? We've said before, but whatever he's here, thank God we've got him.
And he's stopped the rot. Whatever happens from here on in, the rot has been stopped.
Yes. I think it's turned in a new direction. I really do. And again, we've talked about it in past pods, but you've got to give enormous credit to the board for being so brave, really, and forward thinking. It was a huge decision at the time. Had it have blown up in the face, they would really have been lambasted from all angles, wouldn't they? But he was the right man, the right fit at the right time, and all credit to him. And I just keep fingers crossed that we can keep everyone we need fit in this running and into whatever playoffs hopefully we get into, because I do think we've a hell of a chance. I still think we've a hell of a chance.
And Stuart, 3 weeks' time, supporters will be able to go to the Technique Stadium and see it for themselves. How big a day? I know it'll be limited to just 3,000 people, and I'm sure a hell of a lot more tickets could be sold than that. But how big a day will that be for those Chesterfield supporters lucky enough to get a ticket, and for the players as well?
It'll be immense, won't it? It'll be like a mini playoff final in itself, won't it? I think, with everybody finally able to get back for the first time in a long time. It should give everyone such a lift, really. It'll probably work against us a week later when we go to Halifax Town, if they need to get anything to climb into the playoffs and dump us out of it. Certainly it should provide that little impetus just to drive us closer to the finishing line. It'll be such a good day, you know, for the players and everybody to get a flavour of what it can be like, but also to the fans, you know, who have stuck by the club and have poured money in as much as they could through the streams and the halftime draw and all that. So, you know, all the club's initiatives that buying the pork cobs before the game and that sort of thing, whatever it is, it'll be a reward for them for doing their bit to try and keep the club going while we haven't been able to have fans in properly.
Absolutely. And, you know, trying to find a way of finishing sort of second, third, fourth or fifth, when at least you get you're guaranteed at least one home playoff match as well, it'll be great. And of course, I presume that the playoff final, which is say on opening up day almost, isn't it? That there'll be people to be able to go to that if Chesterfield are involved. I've been fortunate to be able to go to the majority of the matches this season with no supporters, and I have to say, it's not the same. It's not the same game. It doesn't feel right. It's been great to see the performance of the team. but when there's nobody there to cheer on that Bromley win the other night, how many people would have gone to King's Lynn? Never been there before.
Yeah,
you know, not a million miles away. We'd have had 2,000 people.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, for that, but with the form that the team was in, that was a fifth straight, you know, whatever it was, wasn't it? Something like that. And the place would have just been thronging with Chesterfield supporters. And I was thinking exactly that at the time. You know, how disappointed that probably was the game that disappointed me the most of all, because of the run that Chesterfield had been on, and the fact that it was a new ground, and you know, people would have just gone there in their squillions, as they would do to Halifax, if there's anything.
I was thinking about Halifax. Is that bus station still over where the away end used to be?
Yeah, they'd be able to get on the top and look over.
Yeah, because there'll be a lot of people getting a bus to Halifax if there is from town.
Yeah, there's a high rise across the road, isn't there?
Everybody who lives in there could let their rooms out, couldn't they?
But I think they can get a few quid for that, for sure. And Nottingham Forest on the roofs on Compton Street all over again.
Yeah,
I think. But we'll start winding up now. Simple question: will Chesterfield make the playoffs? Yes or no? Secondary question: only answer it if you answer yes. Is will they make it third time lucky for James Rowe in the playoffs from a success point of view? Well, shall we start off with Stuart? We'll start off with you.
I think we'll get in them. Yeah. You know, we've got a relatively good run in, so I think we'll have enough now. We're back in them to stay in them. And as to whether or not we'll go on and win it, I think we've got at least as good a chance as any of the other teams in it. You know, some will have more points than us. We'll have won more games over the course of the season than us. But it's a toss of a coin, isn't it, really, by then? You know, you have one team just has a bad day, really, and that's all you need. We saw that last time. Danny Rowe went there with Fylde, didn't we, who were the favoured team, and just happened to be rubbish on the day and got beat. So it's difficult to say whether we would or if we didn't, but if we didn't, I've absolutely no doubt that we'll go up next season. Without even having to bother with the playoffs, personally, I think we'll.
I mentioned Danny Rowe, of course, whilst it wasn't a playoff final. He has scored the winning goal in a final at Wembley in the FA Trophy for Fylde, and a decent goal it was too. And just in case people weren't sure, the final this year will not be at Wembley because we're into Euro 2020 territory, only a year. So the venue hasn't been absolutely decided. I think most speculative talks about Leicester. I don't know if you've heard anything more, Darryl, on that.
No, that was still the speculation, Phil, that the King Power was favourite.
The only thing that would worry me about going up through the playoffs is the absolute tiny amount of time that you've got to do anything before you have to start life in League Two again.
Yeah. You know, yes.
It's going to be such a disadvantage for whoever has to do that.
Yeah, and it's
really, you want to win it, don't you?
Yeah. It's 2 or 3 weeks later for the start of the National League, isn't it? That said, you've done your pre-season on the park, haven't you? A lot of it. You'll only have a couple of weeks to stuff yourself with ice cream at Malaga.
if you can go there, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's it. Go there. No question. So make a note of that, Paul. Stuart sitting on fence.
I suppose I am. But we're going to get in them, whether we win them or not, you know.
Well, we either will or we won't. I accept that. You'll be right on that. Daz, your turn next.
Yes, we'll make the top seven. And I don't know whether it's heart really.
It's not so easy, is it? It's not so easy, is it, now?
But I've believed for a few weeks now that we will do it. I don't know how we're going to do it. I think it's going to be purgatory. But I do fancy us in a one-off game against anybody in this division.
And who would you want to avoid the most of all?
Oh, God grief. well, on paper, Stockport, but if past history tells us that if we lose twice to them in the league, we knock them out of the playoffs. So I'm not.
Yeah, we've got a 100% record against them in playoff matches.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not worried about that. And the other thing is, you know, with there now being four teams battling for the title, there's going to be three very disappointed bunnies.
Yes.
Come the 29th of May.
Definitely.
And trying to get up again for two of those three that will end up with the free weekend will be very difficult.
Mm. Yeah, agree. So Daryl does thinks that we'll get there by hook or by crook. Paul?
Yes, he will definitely in the top seven because I've backed us to get in the top seven.
Oh, well, you know, what
So it was ages ago. It wasn't too long in terms of odds. But it was. I always do it at the start of the season anyway, even when we were particularly poor. And we've got four home games out of the next six after tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, and we haven't been playing that well at home recently. That's got to change. So, or I should say, we haven't been getting the right results at home in the past few weeks, I should say. That will change, and we shall cement our place in the playoffs, absolutely no problem. We may even get it up as far as third in the table, which would, of course, mean an away game. But to start with, but I think Hartlepool will get the top of the tree. So that's a danger side out of the way. I say Stockport, but, you know, I've seen nothing really of any other sides other than Hartlepool to worry about. Mm-hmm. So that's my theory, is yes and yes.
Yeah, we were so poor in the two matches against Stockport in the league, and half decent in the one we won on pens that was expunged, and dreadful in the follow-up match, yeah. Weren't we? So, there's definitely more to come. I said to Bron, who does the Chesterfield social media, apart from this weekend, of course, after about three or four games that James Rowe was in charge, having spoken to the manager a couple of times, seen the improvement that he'd made in no time at all, and I said we'd go up when we were probably still fifth or sixth from bottom. And I've not had anything to change my mind. I think that overlap we've got in midfield, even though there's weaknesses in other areas in depth, I think that will be the most important thing. Now, I've got a little bit like we were talking about whether Hartlepool's fortnight off is going to be an advantage or a disadvantage. I know if you finish I don't think I'd want to finish second or third. It means you get the final at home if you get there, but it means you've had a week off. And I think I'd rather play because the matches then are a weekend. There's not a midweek game in. So you've got plenty of time with the manager, with the players, and plenty of recovery time. And I think that not playing might be. So I'd the ideal position for me is fourth or fifth, because then you're at home in the first, in the semi-finals. And then in a one-off match, anything can happen, can't they? So, and if you go to somewhere like Sutton and it's a sellout with about 420 supporters, the fan thing might not make a difference. Away at Stockport might do. Away at Hartlepool might do. Away at Halifax might do. But, who knows? But I'm fairly confident that we'll go up. Apart from that Hartlepool match back in October, the only team I've seen on a par with that this season has been Chesterfield. So, we've seen Chesterfield more time than we've seen any other team. But, the only team that's come close to that Hartlepool performance, I think, has been Chesterfield. So I'm confident, and everything seems to be in place at the moment. Will I be gutted if we don't go up? I think I will. Like Stuart says, though, I'll be very confident for next season. And with fans in, I think that'll make a big difference. And if we don't go up, who would I like to go up? Well, Sutton and whatever, to keep some northern teams in and teams that'll bring fans, So if Sutton and Bromley went up, yeah, if we didn't, I wouldn't be overly disappointed. Such is life. Anyway, anything anybody wants to add? We've done our sort of 75 minutes or whatever that we normally would do. Anything anybody wants to add? Have you got any nice juicy bits of tittle tattle, Daz?
No, only that I was thinking earlier today and had a quick tot up. We're coming to the end of an era for no less than 15 players out of contract in a few weeks' time.
Does that include the lads who are on loan as well? Does that include
No. That's with those on top. The Dinangas and Yusufs and whoever else, Clark and so on. And of those 15, off the top of my head, the only one who I think's even got a chance for contract now is Yarni, personally. I don't think any of the others.
No, I wouldn't overly disagree with that. Yeah, we've just mentioned two great trios in midfield, and Mandeville wasn't mentioned in it.
No.
Much that he's played his part, he's not had the consistency. He's not played a single 90 minutes for Chesterfield this season. He's either started and been subbed or been subbed.
As soon as he gives him an opportunity to start a game and influence it, he never turns up for me.
No.
He fluffs it, doesn't he? Fluffs his lines.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's a good analogy. Really.
Yeah, that said, crackerjack of a winner at Eastleigh.
Good finish.
Really, really well, didn't he, there? So there's that said, we've got that many players at the moment on the book, on furlough, out on loan, whatever it might be, that... we've got the basis of a pretty good side with what we've got already, haven't we, for next season, National League or EFL?
Mm-hmm.
We've 19 signed on for next season.
Wow. That's... and just to confirm, Yusuf and Dinanga... Well, Dinanga always was alone, but Yusuf was with a view to longer, but I don't think that can be called in if the club doesn't want it to be called in, can it? I think that is a genuine loan,
right?
If I remember, it does, yeah. So, Stuart, you any additions to anything to add?
No great facts and figures that we didn't already know about. The anniversary tomorrow of our last home win in the Football League, but first time at Newport, wasn't it 1-0 with a Dennis goal? But now. First time for a long time, we can look forward to the next home win in the Football League, I think, and have some idea that it's actually going to take place while all four of us are still on this planet, which wouldn't have been the case a year or two ago.
No, absolutely. Well, we'll be able to see where we are in August, 12 months on, won't we, really? So. Looking forward to that, regardless of what happens. Paul, are you anything to add?
Just a couple of things, really. Just a nod to my father, making sure he's all right, he's fine and everything. So that's good. And secondly, if you're listening via your podcast providers, can you please rate, review, subscribe to it if you really want to, and let us know and get us up those charts. I don't know how they do it, but it happens somehow. So thank you very much for anybody's contributions prior to that. But if they can, that'll be super stuff.
And if you're not listening to the podcast, you're not listening.
I won't bother rate and review it, yeah.
Don't rate and review it. A waste of time in it, really. So, massive 3 days coming up. Hartlepool and Torquay. It won't make or break the season, for sure. There's 7 games to make or break the season in for Chesterfield. We all think that we'll make the playoffs, and then we all think we've got a pretty good chance beyond that. So, times like this, it's great to be a Spireite. So thanks for listening in, and we'll be back, I'm sure, before the end of before the last ball's kicked this season. So from me, Phil Tooley, Daryl Carpenter, Stuart Basson and Paul Fisher, enjoy this weekend, and let's hope it's a fun dabby dozy one.
Thank you.
And if you like this podcast, then don't forget to subscribe. Please rate and review us on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, and many of your favourite podcast providers.